What's up, everybody? Before you get to your show, it's DJ and Bucky here from Move the Sticks to tell you what's coming up on our latest Move the Sticks episode.
We're going to talk about which drills you need to pay attention to for each position and which ones are overrated. We also will talk about the big-time players to watch at the Combine.
Yeah, everything you need to know about the Scouting Combine you can find on the latest Move the Sticks episode, YouTube, NFL.com/podcast, as well as iTunes.
What is going on? It is another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. I am not James Coe. I am Marcus Grant alongside Adam Rank.
Hello.
And the Adam Rank, the Fantasy Maverick.
I do pretty well that I don't speak until I'm spoken to.
I feel like that's a good thing, right?
I'm proud of you, Rank.
I felt that you got right to me.
Right.
James Coe will let it go.
Yes, he likes to spread things out a little
Five,
bit.
5-10 minutes.
You heard the voice of the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, there behind the glass. Of course, no James Coe. He is dealing with a stomach bug. Those were the words he texted.
Yeah, he said he'd been out of commission for like a week,
yeah,
and he hadn't gotten any better, so he is laid up, probably snuggling with baby Coe, although hopefully not getting her sick. But
you gotta quarantine yourself when that happens.
It's kind of been a rough year for James Coe.
Car accident.
Go back to late last year. He had the shoulder issue. He had a rotator cuff injury, then a car accident. Now the stomach bug. So we're all pulling for you, James. But you were starting to get the label of injury prone.
If there's one thing that renders no follow up questions,
It's stomach bug.
You're like, tells me, I'm sick. Like, what's wrong? Like, everybody wants to diagnose it. You're like, hey, stomach bug. Everybody's like, okay.
That's good.
Good enough.
Stay home.
So, got plenty to do today. We will finish up our post-mortems of the divisions with the NFC South. But, of course, the big news from the past week in the football world was the scouting combine in Indianapolis. So, we're going to talk plenty of that. In fact, we have our first guest.
Yes, I'm going to intro him here quick before we bring him in. This offseason, there's a lot of great people in the fantasy community we wanted to try and bring on the show and discuss things with us. And with the Combine wrapping up, we're bringing in John Moore. He's at the CFX on Twitter. He does a lot of great work for RotoViz. He's on the RotoViz radio podcast, and he does college football write-ups for Pro Football Focus Fantasy as well. So he is the person to talk to when it comes to the combine and prospects and everything. So, John, welcome to the Fantasy Live Podcast.
Yes, thank you guys for having me on. Glad to be with you and absolutely thrilled to discuss the combine. It was certainly an exciting event and one that we can jump into.
For sure. So did I get everything right there in the introduction? Anything else you want to tell us about yourself or your background and getting into this crazy world of writing about football?
No, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. I was the guy that I just always loved football, always tried to find ways to exercise that passion. I studied finance in college, but because the financial crisis hit right as I was graduating, kind of went a different path, but football was sort of my way to apply my sort of numeric worldview to something that I felt passionately about since I was a kid, and here we are a few years later, and I'm really glad to be on the show with you guys.
Awesome. Well, I'll get us started off here. So before we dive into individual prospects and stuff and guys that we saw perform well and didn't perform so well, everybody tends to have one of their guys in the draft class, you know, somebody that they might like to pound the table more for than other people or who they like a little better than others, maybe the general consensus is. So do you have a guy this draft? And if so, who is he?
You know, I have a guy that I love this draft, but he laid a bit of an egg at the combine, but I'm going to stick with him, and that guy is Tyler Boyd out of Pitt. When you look at Boyd, you've got a guy who, for three seasons, really carried that passing offense. I know this last year his numbers were a little bit down overall, but if you go back to 2014 and compare him neck and neck with Amari Cooper in terms of their age, in terms of size, yards per target production, market share production, basically across the board, Tyler Boyd's 2014 was almost equal to Amari Cooper's by many of the metrics that I rely on. And so even though he ended up being a little bit of an underwhelming athlete at the combine, he's still a guy that I think, because of his diverse production in college, special teams, running, receiving, even through passes in college, which I think is an interesting indicator of how much the coaching staff trusted him, he's a guy that I really think could succeed at the next level as probably a high-end kind of slot receiver, maybe like a Keenan Allen type. And if you remember, Keenan Allen had a lot of athletic question marks coming out. We didn't get the best read on him. that obviously made a pretty big impact right away in San Diego.
Yeah, he was dealing with some injuries too, I think, when he came through the process, which didn't help his stock either. So a guy we've had lots of discussions on here, and it seems that the draft community is a little divided on, is not divided on in a bad way, but Kenneth Dixon. Some people think he's a complete back. Some people think he's a change of place, you know, change of pace guy. Like, I think Josh Norris has him in his top 32 overall. Bucky Brooks thinks he's like a fourth or fifth round pick. He had a decent, he had a pretty good combine. I think it kind of confirmed what we all saw on tape. Like, he's got the good short area quickness, not the greatest long speed. What's your take on Kenneth Dixon? Do you think he can be a complete back in the NFL?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And the things that I really like about Kenneth Dixon is, first, that he's got the size to handle the workload, and that he proved that he can handle the workload during his career at Louisiana Tech. He checked in at the combine right about 5'10", 215 pounds, which is perfectly fine for me. As far as athleticism, really was above average in just about everything except his speed, which he was about average. And so for that, you know, I like guys, particularly running backs. I pay attention to their agility, especially check the boxes there. And then as far as his receiving ability, that's where he really shines. One of the best receiving running backs in this class. And so when you look at a guy that he has the experience being involved in the passing game, not only as a receiver, but also as a protector, I think he's demonstrated a lot of the abilities that that you want to see out of a three-down back in the NFL. And I think in some ways, guys like him can almost be like boringly awesome in the sense that they do everything at a high level. Maybe not anything in particular that really wows you, but
right,
you just get the job done everywhere.
Totally.
I mean, you talk about, yeah, there are guys I think that have the ability to be three-down backs. Have we gotten past that though? I mean, since teams generally use some sort of a rotation, I mean, is there such a thing, unless you're an Adrian Peterson type, where you will have the opportunity in the league to be a three-down back anymore?
I mean, I think if you're asking, is there a guy in this class who I think could be a three-down back?
Yeah.
I think Ezekiel Elliott certainly fits that mold. He's a guy that I think Eric Galco said it really well. He's someone that can run block, receive, and pass block. And that's a guy, along with his production, along with his age, size, speed, I think Ezekiel Elliott can be that. And that's the thing. I think with each class, there really are only maybe one or two guys that can be that. And I think that Kenneth Dixon, along with Ezekiel Elliott, can really both do that.
What round are we looking at Dixon going in? Because I'm kind of hoping that he falls to one of those better teams, because it always comes out to be like a situational type thing. Like, a good enough running back, like if he went, and not necessarily in the first round, but if he went to like Cleveland, I just think it would be, I'm using that as an example, but where do you see him? I guess this is a long-winded way of saying, where is he going?
Well, I mean, I think there's so many variables, it's tough to nail down a specific spot for him team-wise, but I think range-wise, I would look for him to come off the board probably in the back half of round two, maybe into the early round three part. In recent years, that's where we've seen a good number of backs go.
Yeah, like the Gio Bernard, Eddie Lacy kind of run that we've seen in the last couple of years, you're feeling?
Exactly. And so I think that bottom half of round two, because for me, he's one of the best five running backs in this class. And so usually by about the 64th, 65th pick, something like that, the fourth or fifth back will be off the board.
All right, speaking of the top five backs in the class, heading into the combine, one guy that I had seen climbing up a lot of draft boards was Alex Collins out of Arkansas, and then he did not have the greatest athletic showing at the combine. So did this change your opinion of him? I actually don't know how high you were on him beforehand, and what do you think it's done to his draft and fantasy value heading into the next year?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, because Collins was one of those guys that I think as proxy for combine athleticism, I like to go back and look at what they did coming out of high school with all the different like Nike camps that these guys will go to. And he was someone that I was actually expecting to have plus athleticism. And so when he came in pretty much below average in almost everything, it was pretty surprising. And he's a guy that I think when you look at him, all three seasons at Arkansas was over 1,000 yards from scrimmage, which I really like. He's got the size in the 215-220 pound range that I really like to see. But, man, that athleticism was a pretty big red flag. And I think when you look at it, I mean, I was looking for guys who basically were as productive as Alex Collins was, but as unathletic as he proved to be. And a couple names, college names that came up that I thought were interesting were Stephen Taylor from Stanford and Antonio Andrews out of Western Kentucky.
Interesting.
And to me, those guys both scream a little bit of system producers, if you will.
Yeah.
People talk a lot about system quarterbacks or system wide receivers, but I think there is such a thing as a system running back. And I know that Bielema, with the history at Wisconsin and now down at Arkansas, I think there's a little bit of a chance that he falls into that mold. I think Alex Collins is certainly an NFL-worthy running back and you know, one of definitely the best 10 running backs in this class, but just definitely makes you scratch your head when somebody has that big a disparity in production, especially in the SEC, and then proves to be that unathletic.
That's right. The one thing, too, is you talk about Bielema, and everybody always makes jokes about the Wisconsin running backs, but you got to remember, it's a coaching thing. It's not necessarily the program or anything like that. It's a coaching thing. And honestly, I mean, it wasn't that much of a surprise to me because I know that he had some success, but when he's playing in the SEC, you see Fournette and you see Derrick Henry. I think it's very easy to look at this guy and be like, yeah, he's just not as good as them. Like, even not even the combine numbers notwithstanding. I mean, I just feel like watching him, I just didn't feel like he was on that level of the other two guys.
Yeah, and I think in fairness to Collins, though, I mean, those two guys are, I don't want to say generational talents, but
they're pretty rare
commodities. And so, you know, there's been this run of backs coming out of the SEC. If you look back over the last maybe, like, I don't know, 5 years or so, the Zach Stacys and the Stephen Ridleys, and these guys that are productive, and they kind of come out a little bit lost in the fray, if you will. They get trapped behind these other SEC runners who get more attention, and they can still have good peaks in the NFL, but I don't necessarily know if they are, like, you know, long-term type assets that you'd get excited about. Certainly a name to know, though.
Moving on, and we can do this. We can speak freely here about Daniel Lasco because noted Cal honk James Coe is not with us today. But Lasco, I had a lot of big numbers, put us with a lot of good numbers at the combine. I mean, where do you see him? What does this do for him after the week in Indianapolis?
You know, we talked a little bit earlier about Tyler Boyd and how you really need to go back to 2014, I think, to see him at his best. And I think for Daniel Lasco, it's a similar situation. 2014, he was absolutely spectacular, over 1,400 scrimmage yards, 14 touchdowns. And then this year he came out, got off to a great start, and then had a hip injury, was out, you know, then had an ankle injury, and then was out. And I think for him, he's probably a little bit undervalued on the national radar right now. Obviously, this performance was just kind of mind-blowing. I mean, one of the most sort of straight-line, explosive guys who's been through the combine at the running back position in recent years. The tricky part with him, though, is that he's really not agile whatsoever. And I don't know if sort of juicing himself up to do well in these explosive things, explosive drills, he sacrificed some of that. But that's actually something that I almost care a little bit more about than the explosiveness, is the agility. And for Lasco, that's definitely a red flag. But absolutely a great receiver, was used as such at Cal. And I mean, I think he's a guy whose stock is definitely on the rise. I'm not sure how high I want to move him just yet. I want to kind of see how he does at his pro day, but certainly a guy to track moving forward, particularly for people who are more metrically inclined in terms of athleticism and whatnot.
Yeah, his three cone was the one that was a little disappointing after seeing him light up the rest of the vertical with 41.5 inches and an 11-foot, 3-inch broad jump was pretty crazy. So we're going to shift gears a little bit to wide receivers now. Oh, did you have something else, Rank?
No, I was just going to add a comment about him and just say that he's going to be one of those guys who's going to end up frustrating you because I guarantee you, there's going to be a preseason game where he breaks a huge run and everybody's going to go crazy for him. But because he just doesn't, I don't know, I just watching him, like, he's got to be in a straight line and go because he's not going to hit the hole and he's not going to make an adjustment. So I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm just interjecting.
No, that's what this is for.
I don't want to take up all John's time.
I know.
Well, we have plenty of time to bag on these guys.
So, as I was saying, we'll transition to wide receivers a little bit. Digging through your Twitter timeline, we uncovered that you had Coleman and Dotson. Corey Coleman and Josh Dotson were your top two favorites. Do you still feel that way after Laquon Treadwell put up a pretty solid combine, even though he didn't run the 40-yard dash?
Yeah, for me, I think the thing with Coleman and Dotson is that, in my eyes, they're somewhat more realized as prospects. I think Treadwell, you have a lot of things with him that people like to see. He's 6'2", 221. That's a big check mark. He's young, which matters a lot in my worldview. Just going to be 21 years old as a rookie. which is the same as Amari Cooper last year. But as far as what he's actually done on the field, I think there's still a lot to be desired. And I think that the promise is there, but really what I did, because I noticed that they checked in at about the same size of the combine, almost exactly the same size, Laquon Treadwell and Dante Moncrief going back a couple of years. Across the board, in virtually every metric that I could devise, Laquon Treadwell and Dante Moncrief were the same on field in terms of efficiency, in terms of the amount of the passing offense that they shouldered. Athletically, Treadwell is much less than what Moncrief was. And I just look at it and I think, you know, people are talking about Treadwell going in the top 15 overall, and Dante Moncrief went 90th overall. Now, does the truth probably lie somewhere in the middle? I think so. I mean, I think Laquon Treadwell is a very good prospect. I think he should be taken in the first round, but I would be much more comfortable with him probably in the 20 to 30 overall range than the top 10 or top 15. Like, he's talking about going, because I think the projectability is there, but I think he is far from the sure thing that he's made out to be by many of the different things that I read.
Yeah, as silly as it is, it could come down a lot to what he runs in his 40 at his pro day. But I've seen him mocked, you know, with our guys at NFL Media and other people, anywhere from going fourth overall to the Cowboys to, you know, the Minnesota Vikings at 22 or wherever they pick. I forget off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else? What else is your beat on Coleman and Dotson? Why are those your favorite guys in the class?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Corey Coleman, it just comes down to him being a really spectacular athlete within the context of the combine. That's the most pressing thing. I know that he didn't run, but considering his size, he weighed in at 194, 40.5-inch vertical, 129-inch broad jump, 17 on the bench. I mean, that's really good on the bench.
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of signifies, you know, I know people talk about, oh, well, you look at these numbers and, you know, what does it really mean? When I see something like that, a 194-pound guy put up 17 on the bench, he's in the weight room. He's doing the work. He's dedicated to his craft. He's dedicated to getting better. And maybe that's a lot to extrapolate from one number, but that matters. And then you look at what he did on field. I mean, I think he caught 20 touchdowns in his first 8 games this season on a per-target basis. He was one of the most heavily targeted receivers in college football last year and managed to pull 11.6 yards every time the ball was thrown in his direction, which is a remarkable number. He's got sort of the age production profile that I really like. And then I know that Baylor kind of gets knocked around a little bit for the kind of offense they run, but in recent years, they've turned out guys who have been quality NFL receivers, Josh Gordon, Kendall Wright, Terrence Williams. And so I think that something that Art Briles is doing is working for putting these guys into the league. And I think that Coleman has the potential to be as good as any of those guys have been. And we saw that both that, you know, Kendall Wright went in the first round and Josh Gordon was used a second round supplemental pick to acquire him. So I think that Coleman's really the guy that I think might end up being my number one receiver in this class.
Well, looking at another wide receiver who is kind of moving up boards is Leonte Carew. Aside from having just a fantastic name, and it's fun to say, I mean, how do you feel about Carew right now?
Yeah, I really like Carew. There's a joke with the guys at RotoViz that there's a certain type of player that is a RotoViz reach, and it's someone who just checks all the metric boxes, but maybe, you know, when you watch him on film, people don't like him as much. And Carew is the guy this year. He just has been absolutely brilliant over the last 2 years. I want to say something in the neighborhood of like 12.6 yards per target over the last 2 seasons, which is the best of anyone in this class. He's shouldered a high percent of his team's passing offense, which I really like. He's got the touchdown prowess that I love to see. I think for his career, he has 5 3 touchdown games, which is just stupid. And even though he maybe doesn't quite have the like prototypical build that you like to see, checking in right at 6 feet and 211 pounds is certainly fine with me. Explosive guy, and he's someone that I think, I know there's some off-the-field issues with him, but I think from the things that I like to pay attention to, drafting him somewhere in the 30 to 40 overall range would be warranted. Not saying that he will end up going there, but I think that would be, you know, a worthy pick in that area.
I got to ask, because a lot was made this weekend of the wide receivers, especially their 40 times. And, you know, Mike Mayock commented on it. Chris Harris jumped in on Twitter to talk about, you know, kind of the disappointing 40 times. And I think we always get to this point in the year where, especially after the combine, people start to talk about whether or not, you know, some of these numbers, the 40 and what have you, are overrated. It always seems like, you know, when it's your guy and he runs a good 40, then it means something. If it's your guy and he runs a bad 40, then it's overrated. But looking at this wide receiver class as a whole, I mean, are these numbers, are they worrisome? Are they overrated? I mean, is there something to take into this?
You know, what I think happens sometimes, and I know this is probably a little bit crazy. Like last year, for example, a lot of the running back 40 times were really slow. This year, all of the wide receiver ones seem to be really slow. I wonder if there's not almost something that happens that somehow the timing mechanism or the however it's calibrated for a given day doesn't just lead to peculiar results sometimes.
Ooh, conspiracy theory. I like it.
Yeah, and I know that's a little bit silly. I know the NFL does a great job with everything, but I don't know.
It's okay. You don't need to say that on this podcast.
He immediately backtracked, like, no. You guys are great.
But it just struck me as odd because a lot of these guys are, I mean, I think this was like the slowest wide receiver class in, you know, 5 or 6 years, something like that. It just struck me as odd because when you watch a lot of these guys, it doesn't seem like they are below average athletes or, you know, even just average athletes. So I don't know what was going on there. Honestly, one thing that I would really like to pay attention to, and this is kind of a check mark in the Corey Coleman box and even Josh Doctson as well, is I just look at the jumping metrics. Because I think even at like pro days, sometimes the times are a little bit finicky. So I just look at how explosive are they when they're jumping, because those things are definitely correlated. And so, I think with the 40s, it was a little bit of a disappointment. And a lot of these guys, in fairness, weren't really that great of jumpers either, who had below average times, like a Tyler Boyd or like a Rashard Higgins. And so some of that kind of lines up. But when you look at guys like Doctson, Coleman, they really are that explosive. Sterling Shepard, and so it's easier to get on board with them.
Awesome. Well, I think that anybody else have any other questions for John? That was a lot of great information there that you dropped on us and our listeners. So, and Adam, Marcus, anybody else want any other questions? Any other prospects?
No. What about? What about Mike Thomas of Ohio State?
Because I was going to say which one.
I know. But this is my thing. Is like I don't watch a lot of the combine because it skews me, and we talked about it last week. Like all it is it's validating your opinion that you already have in some guy. Like if he has a great combine, you're like, see what I told you? If he does poorly, you say, you know what, doesn't matter because what matters is what happens on the field. Mike Thomas is somebody who I look at and I watch enough Ohio State games that to me he just strikes me as somebody who's going to go out there and make an impact in the NFL. What was your read from him coming off the combine?
Yeah, I think for a guy who's probably one of the bigger receivers in this class, he ended up being tremendously agile, which is something that I like to see out of those bigger guys. I think his jumps were good enough. He was pretty strong considering how long of arms he has. So for me, I mean, I like Mike Thomas. I like what he did on the field. He was one of the more consistent touchdown producers in the country this year. I think if you look at him within the context of Urban Meyer receivers, he's one of the more dominant of those guys that have come out. And so I think he's certainly sort of a long-term NFL receiver who will have a solid career. For me, the one thing that kind of comes up a little bit is just that he's a little bit on the older side as far as prospect age. That's something that I pay attention to. Other people, you know, don't give as much credence. But he's certainly a guy who I think is worthy of going in the top two rounds of the draft, especially because this year there's a lot of sort of small receivers or at least longer and leaner kind of guys. And Thomas is pretty well-built and has the Ohio State pedigree and really has done nothing but produce over the last year.
Well, John, appreciate the time. Let everybody know where they can find you out there on the interwebs.
Yeah, the best place to interact with me is on Twitter at the CFX, and I'll be glad to chat with you there.
Awesome. And read his stuff on RotoViz. Check out the RotoViz Radio podcast. John is everywhere, and he's got a lot of great information on these prospects and more. So, John, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. John, you still there? Hey, John, you here with me?
He gone. All
right. I just get a John, you there? Or? All right, cool. Thanks again, man. Really appreciate it. And I'll tag you on Twitter when the link is ready, and then you can, you know, retweet it or do what else you want. All right, thanks. That was a good time. Really appreciate you hopping on. Have a good one. Bye. All right, so let's just, Marcus, maybe you want to transition us out of
yep.
that there, and then we'll get into the postmortem.
Sounds good. Let me know when to go.
Go for it.
All right, 3, 2. Thanks a lot to John Moore for his time. As he mentioned, you can hear him on RotoViz Radio and find him on Twitter at the CFX. And hopefully, as Alex mentioned earlier, we plan to get on a lot more folks from the fantasy community to come and chat with us, even maybe about things that aren't necessarily straight up fantasy football.
Absolutely. There's already one person on the docket who has
who?
An interesting story. Liz Loza, our good friend from
Yahoo. Yes.
Your good friend.
Our pal.
Not you. The collective you too. I don't want to be put into that crew.
All we know is she apparently auditioned for a role in one of our favorite bad movies.
And she's going to tell us about it. And we'll talk fantasy and stuff as well. So Liz also has the benefit of being a Los Angelino like us. So we can get her in studio to hear all the wonderful happenings of that audition process.
Yeah, we'll have maybe it's an oral history of almost being in the room.
Yes.
So there we go.
But yeah, so thanks again to John for hopping on the podcast. I thought that was a lot of really good information. Obviously a sharp guy when it comes to watching prospects and stuff. And yeah, those were some good takeaways from the combine. But should we dive into the NFC South here?
Yeah, let's take a look at the NFC South. This is our final post-mortem from 2015 as we can now, after this, dive fully into what will happen in 2016. But let's start with the top of the division, the team that won, you guess you can't say the NFC pennant, that's baseball, but the NFC crown, the NFC title holders, the Carolina Panthers. Obviously a fantastic season, 15-1 in the regular season, a tough loss to the Super Bowl, of course. But the big story coming in to the season for them was Kelvin Benjamin goes down. They don't apparently have any wide receivers. Everybody wonders what's going to happen. You know, a lot of us, myself included, took Cam Newton down our fantasy draft boards because we just didn't know who he was going to throw the football to. Obviously, Cam had a phenomenal season. But now, Kelvin Benjamin coming back from injury. And, yeah, Alex, do you think he is a wide receiver too next year? Where do you have him?
I would be happy to slide him into that role. I think he's still a pretty young guy, and we saw what he was able to do with Cam in their first year together. Kelvin Benjamin has seemed to be growing a little bit through the offseason. So, and there's going to be volume for him in this passing attack. I mean, Ted Ginn had his 10 touchdowns last year magically, but we know that's not going to happen again. And Benjamin's going to fit that type of chain mover, and he's the other big target that Cam needs in addition to Greg Olsen to, you know, move that offense down the field. So I would feel very comfortable taking Benjamin in the wide receiver two range.
He strikes me as one of those guys that the narrative around June and July will be like, hey, this guy's going to be undervalued because people are forgetting that he's coming off an injury, and then everybody will have remembered it. And by August, he'll be right back up into the mix again. And I really expect a lot out of him this coming season. I think that the Carolina Panthers are going to take a little bit of a step forward, which is kind of hard to say because they were 15-1, and outside of a poor performance in the Super Bowl, it's really going to be hard to kind of top what they did. But one of the things I really liked hearing about over the combine week was that Ron Rivera was giving his team an extra month off, actually 5 weeks, because they said, look, we had an extra month and 5 weeks of playoff practice, so I really don't need my guys back out there. And so you look at a lot of these teams that have those like long playoff runs and then fall off the next season. It's because they have all that extra practice time. They don't really have an opportunity to go out and get well and get healed and everything like that. I don't think that's going to be a problem for Carolina. I think the fact that Rivera is looking out for his team in such a way makes his players want to play hard for him and really want to show up and do a great job. So I expect Carolina to be back into the mix, and I expect this offense to be a little bit better. You know, I mean, Cam Newton is still going to grow as a quarterback. He's still got a chip on his shoulder, which is good. So I think that Benjamin's going to benefit from all that.
Yeah, I mean, looking back to Kelvin Benjamin in his rookie season was wide receiver 17 at the end of the year, which, I mean, at least for me, that exceeded my expectations of him in his first year. 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns, obviously a huge red zone target. And I think that especially is where he will continue to excel. I mean, I know they're hoping to kind of get some more guys in the mix. Devin Funchess, I think, is a guy they kind of want to work in there. But I see Kelvin Benjamin jumping back in and being that big red zone target for Cam Newton. And I think that, one, obviously Benjamin produces. I think it also helps Greg Olsen because that's less attention that he gets in the center of the field. And if Devin Funchess can take a step forward, suddenly that's 3 really good pass targets in that offense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's only going to help Cam because he, like you said, he progressed last year and he played phenomenally. I mean, he had a 7.1 touchdown percentage, which was the highest in the league. So it'll be good to see him get another guy that can actually, you know, catch those passes in the red zone and convert those things into scores.
Jonathan Stewart, who had, I think, one of his better seasons, did get hurt late in the season. I know that was always the fear for him, that, you know, when it comes to drafts, a lot of people are always worried about his durability. But overall, was a good year, and in a land where running back depth is non-existent, I mean, why wouldn't you take a chance on him as an RB2 next year?
I absolutely would. I was the one that was pounding the table for Jay Stu all through the offseason in this very room, much, you know, to, you know, your delight, because you guys could all make fun of me for it. But and while he started off slowly, there was a period in the middle of the season, I think it was after their bye. Yes, it was after their bye. So he had that big game in Seattle where, like, I think they hadn't let a rushing touchdown allowed in so many games, and he scored 2. So from week 6 to week 14, he averaged, hold on, let me just finish doing my math here. And I accidentally started a video. Wow, I'm falling apart right now. But he averaged, he had several double digit fantasy games in a row. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 8 weeks, he had 12 or more fantasy points. So he was so consistent. He was in that, like, Mark Ingram mold where he was going to get you points every week. We know this offense needs him to be at its full strength. Like, it operated the best when Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton were both running the ball effectively. So, I mean, yes, injury risk is there. He's another year older, but as the lead back in one of the NFL's top offenses, I don't know how you pass it up as an RB2.
That's the one thing, too, is it really depends on what's going to happen in the draft, because I think what we saw out of Cappy was not exceptional, although yeah. I really liked him coming out of college. I liked him at Auburn, and I thought he was going to come out and have a little bit more of a role. But if they kind of stand pat and really don't address the running back position, it shows me that they're confident. Plus, you know, a lot of his injury, too, was the fact that – or the reason that he missed so many games was the fact that they were so far ahead in that division that they didn't really need to rush him out there. Like, what are we going to do? Like, let's hold him. Let's try to keep him fresh for the playoffs, which was kind of the smart thing to do. So I'm down with
him. I think what you're right. You're right. Hopefully, what they do get in the draft is a third down back who's quick and shifty and a little bit more of an adept pass catcher, because that would keep Jonathan Stewart fresh to do all his early down work and you know, stuff along the goal line. And I was finally able to finish my calculations. It was 13.6 fantasy points per game during that stretch once he started getting enough carries.
There you go. Moving along to the Atlanta Falcons, I can't get excited about the Falcons offense. I mean, I know obviously Devontae Freeman had a fantastic year. I know there were high hopes for Tevin Coleman. Julio Jones obviously is outstanding. Maybe it's because I look at Matt Ryan and it just brings the whole thing down for me. Am I weird like that? Like, there are so many great pieces, but Matt Ryan just kind of like,
Yeah, it hurts. it should be more. Hey, Johnny Buttons. Sorry, I'm waving to people randomly. Sorry, Tina. I'm sorry. I did not acknowledge you. I'm not acknowledging
the crew.
These are all
fine people behind the glass right now.
It's so distracting. I'm trying to make a point here because Johnny Buttons is a huge Ohio State guy. I was pounding the table for Mike Thomas, so you would have been happy with that. But Matt Ryan definitely ruins the whole thing. He's uninspiring, and you look at Julio Jones, you're like, part of you thinks that he could be so much better, that he deserves so much better to play with a real coach and a real.
He had 1,800 yards and 8 touchdowns last year.
Listen, well, I want 2,200 and 20. I can't want more. He was my first round draft pick in one of my leagues. So I don't know. Everything about this team just stinks. Wow. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It is Matt Ryan.
So, I guess, okay, real question, though. I mean, next year, Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman. How does this shake out?
Okay, first, before we get to that, I think you guys are being a little too hard on saying everything about this team stinks.
I didn't say everything
he
about
said
this team
it.
Stinks.
You said it in not so many words. You just tried to pin it all on poor Matty Ice.
Well, no, because you know what's funny is I'll end up drafting Justin Hardy super early. He was one of my – he's already one of my preseason danger zones. Guys.
Like, the thing is, Matt Ryan is who we thought he was. Like, he is who he is. We know what he's going to do. This was just a lower year for him than in the past. Otherwise, he's going to throw 25 to 30 touchdowns. It's not going to be super exciting. But this is an offense where it was built to funnel through the main guys. Like, that's why Julio Jones got a gajillion targets and Devonta Freeman had a gajillion touches. Now, on to your question, Marcus, about Tevin Coleman. The damn offseason reports are already starting. Like, oh, we can't wait to get Tevin Coleman more involved. Like, we think he's going to be a big part of this offense. Like, we heard all this last year, and we saw that this offense operated most efficiently when Devonta Freeman was the workhorse. So I don't know that they're going to look at the tape and be like, yeah, let's strip him of all those touches. But it does make me a little concerned since, as we noted in the offseason, Tevin Coleman is this regime's running back draft pick. Devonta Freeman was a holdover from the last one, so they are naturally going to feel more invested in Coleman. It's just we're going to have to wait and see with
okay,
this backfield to see how it plays out.
See, but I feel like it's people who drafted Coleman last year who want to be like
James Coe.
Like, people who drafted him last year want to listen. Devonta Freeman, and I said it when he was a rookie, and I was famously wrong.
You and I were
famously
both high
wrong.
On him when he was
but
a rookie.
But he came through for us in the second year, and I think like. You, at some point, I understand that you draft a guy and you're like, oh, we really want him to succeed. But then it's also the same thing what happened to Monty Ball in Denver. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, you're not as good as the guy who was already here, so I'm sorry you're not playing. And
right.
I think that Freeman's going to be that guy. Obviously, the biggest concern would be injuries, which is the concern with every single running back out there. So if you just want to draft for the best guy, the guy who will end up being the number one guy, all things being equal,
yeah,
it's going to be Freeman.
I like, if we were drafting right now, I would take Freeman probably in the second round, feel a little nervous about it, but as it gets closer, hopefully, and we see that it's going to go back to the – because Freeman played really well this year.
Absolutely.
He played really well. I would be much more comfortable taking him in that range as a low-end RB1.
So then where would you take Coleman? Presumably as a handcuff somewhere later in the
I'd take a – throw a dart at Coleman in, like, round 8 to 10,
okay.
You know, as, like, a fourth running back or something. With the handcuff and the upside potential. And
oh, yeah, I would definitely – it depends on who drafted Freeman. If it was somebody who I didn't really like, I would probably draft Coleman a little bit early just in case, just to have him there.
So any other pass catchers on this team? I mean, there's obviously Julio Jones is going to be talked about in the first round. No surprise there. Anybody else? I mean, obviously Roddy White may not be in Atlanta next year. I know you mentioned Justin Hardy rank.
Yeah, buddy. He's going to be the number two tenured Falcons wide receiver because Roddy White's not going to be
there. Very well could be. I mean, last year it was Julio Jones with 203 targets, Devonta Freeman with 97. He was number two on the team, the running back, followed by Jacob Tammy with 81. So I'm with Rank. Maybe I'll throw a super late round dart at Justin Hardy or see what else they do in the draft or if that free. I mean, it's not a great free agent class, but. Not really. Not going to get on that Roddy White or Jacob Tammy bandwagon.
No way.
Anything else worth talking about with the Falcons?
Well, also just real quick, because this offense with the coordinator situation and everything, it's one that in the past has funneled through the main guy with Kyle Shanahan. I don't think – I'd have to look, but I feel like historically he hasn't had a lot of number two fantasy wide receivers that have been super relevant in his times as coordinator. So that would be my hesitancy with grabbing anybody too highly other than Julio Jones in this offense.
Does it seem impossible, though? Matt Ryan had 21 touchdown passes last year. 21! In this era of the NFL, I mean, if we're talking like 1978 or something, I'm sure.
That's a huge number, right?
That's a big deal. Like, he had 20, and he still had 16 interceptions. And And that was one – he had three touchdowns against the Indianapolis Colts. And then there's a lot of games where it's 1-1, 0-1. I mean, gosh, this guy, I don't understand. He gets kind of a free pass. Like, everybody always has this perception that Matt Ryan's is one of the upper echelon quarterbacks of the league. And, of course, you're not going to get rid of him because, again, you know, there's a lack of quality quarterbacks in the NFL. But good Lord. Like, how, and he's in his ninth year. Like, it's not like he's a young guy where you're like, hey, he's ready to take this. Like, this is it. This is Matt Ryan.
This is who he is.
This is exactly who he is.
The thing is, though, you know, to pull from our friends at the Around the NFL podcast, he is above the Dalton scale or whatever it is, the Alex Smith scale now, where, like, he's good enough to be your every year starter, and you know he can take you into the playoffs, but is he going to be that dominant player on the field like a Cam Newton or an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson? Like, no.
And if you got a quarterback, like, you got to go. I mean, the Broncos were able to win with a subpar quarterback this year. And I think that – so it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Falcons could one day win a championship. But your defense has got to be good because Matt Ryan's not winning a game.
And theirs is not. At least not.
They're not new. No, not even close.
Not as it stands now. All right. New Orleans Saints. The Saints offense picked up. I mean, it started the, you know, we spent a lot of time at the start of the year, you know, looking for the Saints maybe to be explosive. I think it took them some time to kind of get into that. But Mark Ingram had one of his better seasons, and I was on this show saying that he was going to have double-digit touchdowns this year.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what did he get to?
Not close.
Nine.
He had six. Well, yeah.
But I think he would have gotten there if he didn't get hurt, and he missed a bunch of time, and that, I think, threw everything off. I really firmly believe that. I think he can still be a double-digit touchdown guy one day if he could ever play, you know, 15, 16 games, which hasn't happened since his second year in the league. Again, no running back depth out there. Would you take Mark Ingram as one of the top 10 guys off the board? Top 10 running backs, I should say.
Yeah, top 10 running backs for sure.
Not top 10 players. I know that. But the top 10 running backs.
I'm a big fan of Mark Ingram since his renaissance 2 years ago where he turned his career around. And I've had him in a lot of leagues. I like his running style. It fits with a little bit more what they're trying to do. I wonder if they're going to actually have ways that they get C.J. Spiller involved this year. But, I mean, Mark Ingram actually was like, I wish I knew, had this stat off the top of my head. I totally forgot to grab it beforehand, but he was like one of the leading backs in like targets and total touches early in the season because he was just getting everything from that offense. He was getting all the receptions and all of the rush attempts, except sometimes near the goal line.
I think that, you know, the targets thing, I think, was the one that surprised us so much. I mean, we expected him to get a lot of carries. The fact that he was catching so many passes earlier in the season, I felt like caught a lot of us off guard.
Yeah, I mean, even
especially when, because C.J. Spiller joined the bunch.
Right. Even though he missed, like, what did Ingram miss? Like, five, six games? Actually, I have it right here. He missed four games.
He was still
the fifth. He's fifth on the team in targets. Like, that's...
Which is pretty amazing, yeah, when you consider how prolific that passing offense is. You know what, though? Here's the thing is I have Mark Ingram in the League of Leagues, which is a keeper league, and... I'm really sweating out if Matt Forte goes down there. Because I feel like I'm sitting on it. Because I did this thing. I moved a lot of people around, and I ended up with Mark Ingram, but improving myself in other areas and everything. But I'm, like, looking at it and looking at this free agent class. I'm like, watch. Forte's going to come down there and ruin it all. Ruin it all for me. I like him. I mean, honestly, I feel very comfortable with him. And Mark Ingram is one of those guys, and I know I talk about this at great length, but he is one of those guys that after you get your first couple of players and you load up with wide receivers and a tight end, perhaps if you get Rob Gronkowski, Mark Ingram's that perfect back to have. As you start filling it in with other guys that you're hoping are going to make that leap, Mark Ingram, to me, he's got enough of a pedigree that you can at least expect some consistency as long as he's healthy.
You know, he's like the Honda Civic of running backs. Like,
Is
anybody going to be super impressed that that's what you drive? No. But when you're still driving it 30 years down the road, like,
and he puts some 18-inch rims on it. Then,
yeah.
And
a new paint job, you know, redo the interior. But, yeah, rather than 30 years, you'll get hopefully 16 games out of him.
Right.
Well,
I'm a big fan of putting bigger rims on your car now.
Okay.
I didn't realize how big of a difference that really made till I just recently upgraded.
But then you have thinner tires generally.
No. The tires aren't that thin. No. The tires are fine. I'm getting low profile.
I guess I should ask you, how big are the rims you're putting on your car?
No, the rims. I know. The rims, it's not ridiculous. It's not the low pro. You're thinking of the skinny low pro
tires.
I'm not doing that.
Okay.
I'm getting a regular tire.
Okay.
An 18-inch rim, putting on a regular tire.
Gotcha.
that the fine folks at America's Tire Center or whatever.
I like how Rank just glanced at me. He's like, when is Gelhard going to get too rankled to stop this conversation?
Because we don't have Coast. We have a little bit more time. A little bit more freedom.
He's not going to stoke the fire of your tangents over here.
But I'm just saying, like, it's a nice thing. I mean, and if you're riding around on – just me. Well, you were the one who brought up the Honda Civic comparison.
I did.
I know that the stock rims on that are like 15, 16 inches. You want to upgrade it. It makes your ride so much more smoother. And I guess that's the equivalent of having a little upgrade on the offensive line. That was one thing, too. We didn't talk to John Moore about Derrick Henry.
Yeah, he mentioned him a little bit when we were talking about it. And, I mean, a lot has been made about Henry already. It would have been good to get his opinion on it. But
made me think of it. Because I'm thinking about who the Cowboys are going to end up with. I know that there was something coming out where somebody said that perhaps Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, Lewis Riddick from ESPN this morning on Twitter, else said that he would be shocked if Zeke made it out of the top four.
There's
which
Cleveland.
Basically
Cleveland's
is,
in the top four, so nothing's out of the realm of possibility.
You never know.
There you go.
Sorry.
No,
it's okay.
I brought it back to a football tangent.
No, I like it.
That's pretty good.
All right, let's talk about these wide receivers.
I was going to say, Brandon Cooks, Willie Snead, Cooks we expected to have a good season.
He started out scary, though.
Very poorly, turned it around, had a pretty good year. Willie Snead was the guy that kind of came out of nowhere, and, I mean, he was carrying that offense.
He did come out of nowhere. There's no kind of about it.
So now, going into next year, we know that Marcus Colston is not going to be there anymore. He's been released. These, in theory, are the guys to carry this offense. My concern with Snead is he was hot for a few weeks, and it seems as though our defense has kind of started rolling more attention to him, and he faded away a little bit.
He did get injured, too, though.
That's true.
That didn't help. I know Harmon actually put him through reception perception,
and he fared pretty well.
Numbers were pretty solid.
Yes.
But I think what happened too was it was just a volume thing. Like looking at some of his targets, like when he would go into those spells of not, getting as many looks, there would 5-target game or 6-target, and hopefully he's not a guy that needs a ton of volume. But he had 11 targets, 10 targets, 8, 12, things like that. I'd be interested to see if they add a piece in the draft because they could maybe use. And when I wrote up our Laquon Treadwell for our Prospect Today series, which you guys can read at NFL.com/fantasy, I had thought he might make sense for the Saints because they've got two fast guys in Snead and Cooks. Cooks can play outside or in the slot. Snead played really well in the slot last year. You put Treadwell, that big body chain mover on the outside. Could be a fun little passing attack right there. But I like Cooks. What do you guys think of him? Wide receiver 2 range for Cooks this year again?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
He's a WR2 for me.
Yeah, probably.
What do you guys think with Brandon Cooks? I like him. Last week we were talking about Sammy Watkins. Who would you rather have, Cooks or Watkins?
I'd rather have Watkins.
I think I'd rather have Watkins.
Okay. I'm with you, too. I just know I'll just put it out there. We have people from around the industry coming on. Matthew Berry had his top 200 out, and I was checking it out after we were done because I'm like, I wonder where he has Watkins. And he had him at 19, and he had Cooks at, like, number 12, and I started thinking about it.
Wait, out of the whole 200 or just in wide receiver?
Oh, I'm sorry, a wide receiver.
Okay.
So I was just like, oh, am I missing something? Am I not seeing it? Because I love Watkins. And I know Matthew was at the Combine this week and talked about how the Bills coaches were raving about him. Mm-hmm. So now it makes me think, too, like, oh, I bet he moves up. But I really like Watkins. But but Cooks, again, another one of those guys that if you're at the back end of the second round, that I think he falls to you early in the third round.
Love Cooks in the third, personally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends. I'm thinking, like, if you were at the swing pick – at the second,
yeah.
If you're right there, and I think that's where Cooks falls a lot of. Well, Watkins is there a lot too, because as I do my mock drafts and everything, I always like to start off at the number one position just to see kind of where everything goes.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it sits there, and I'm like, God, if I had Antonio Brown, and you're playing the thing where you could play either 3 receivers, you play 2 and a flex, I'm like, I would happily go Watkins and Cooks right there.
Do Brown, Watkins, Cooks, and then take your shots on running backs later?
I mean, I also feel like Sammy Watkins, I think, has a higher ceiling. I don't think we have scratched exactly what Sammy Watkins can do. I feel like we're a lot closer to seeing who Brandon Cooks is. And that's not bad. I think he's a really talented receiver. I just think he's a lot closer to his ceiling than Watkins.
Right. Watkins is the guy that could really just take over a game, as we saw a couple times last year once he demanded the targets and he got it, because he can take short routes to the house, he can beat guys deep, he's got better size than Cooks where he can jump over guys and get the ball still. And I think that might have been the sign where they finally started giving him the targets he was demanding, and that offense kind of opened up where Sammy could be be poised for a massive year this year.
Yeah, I'm really excited about him. But it's interesting though, just to see, like, I've seen the variance on him, like, so wide ranging, because there's got a lot of guys I respect, like Matthew Berry, who had him low, and then some of the guys I like too also had him real high. Because I think, and I know we did the AFC East last week, but I really think, and it just ties into Cooks because I consider them to be very similar. But I just think Watkins is just on the verge of just having a monster season.
I'm right there with you. I mean, because he was injured for a lot of last year, don't forget, and he still finished with over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns.
Yeah,
they're gonna and he finally has a quarterback that he's going to be with, and Tyrod Taylor there. I think it's all lining up for him, and we're already just throwing fuel on the fire in that hype train.
he also stepped up by demanding the ball too.
Yes,
which I know a lot of people like roll their eyes and are like, Diva wide receiver
and delivering though too.
Yeah, that's a thing.
He did the throw me the damn ball, and then he actually did stuff
and
with
he
it.
Actually did stuff. Right, he caught it and ran with it.
There's a difference. A lot of wide receivers will whine for it. Some might not make the plays. Watkins demanded it, and then he went on a huge tear down the stretch.
Funny how a conversation about Brandon Cooks and Willie Snead ended up with a dissertation on Sammy Watkins.
Yeah,
I think it's important for comparison.
No, it is. And the last thing on Willie Snead is last year Snead had 101 targets. He had 69 catches, just shy of 1,000 yards. If he didn't get injured, he probably would have crossed it. Only 3 touchdowns, which could bounce back. Drew Brees was injured as well. That was actually, like, as prolific as that passing offense is, Drew Brees didn't hit 5,000 yards. Whoa!
Yeah.
And only 32 touchdowns. So I think that offense could take a bounce back this year, and touchdowns are one of the most widely variant statistics anyways. So Snead is a guy I will definitely be taking shots at as a wide receiver, is my, like, wide receiver 3 to 5 range later in drafts, depending on the board falls.
Over to now the Tampa Bay – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say an alumnus of the U.
There you go. Over to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay, so this isn't on the list, but you mentioned touchdown variance and that sort of thing being wild.
Correct.
And the first name that comes to mind for me is Mike Evans, who – there are a lot of people in this world who are much higher on Mike Evans than I am. you know, I think he's fine. Had the fantastic rookie year, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Last year, more yards, had more catches and more yards – but just 3 touchdowns. Maybe that was a product of working with Jameis, a new quarterback in the first year, what have you. I mean, will the real Mike Evans please stand up? I mean, are you a, you know, closer to 8 or 9 touchdown guy? I'm not going to say 12, but maybe an 8 or 9 touchdown guy, or are you going to be the 3 to 5 touchdown guy? I mean, who is
My
Mike
guess
Evans?
Is he slides back into that 8 or 9 range. Let's not forget that he started the year with, I think it was a hamstring injury, and he missed the first couple games. And then he came back slowly, and I think he missed some of the offseason work, so he didn't get that early rapport with Jameis. Jameis, rookie year, solid rookie year, only 22 touchdowns, though, so there's not a ton to go around. And, you know, he peppered them all throughout his offense. But Evans is clearly the guy. He had 148 targets, which was more than double the next closest person on the team. He and Jameis, there were several games where they showed a good rapport, and you could just kind of see, like, oh, this is what's to come. So I would expect Evans to kind of even out in both regards and maybe be like one of those 1,008 guys every year.
Yeah, he seems like somebody who a lot of people are going to be sleeping on a little bit, who's kind of going to fall through the cracks. Once again, I'll spit it out. but again, he probably goes into that conversation too with Sammy Watkins, Brandon Cooks, where it's that group of receivers where you're really going to be having to make a decision on. I like Sammy Watkins, obviously, more than him. I like Evans over Brandon Cooks because it was something that you were saying about Sammy Watkins, where the ceiling on him is really high. And I think that this Buccaneers offense has a chance to take a little bit of a step forward. I think that Lovie Smith was probably holding him back a little bit because he's very conservative. So I think now with Dirk Cutter, even though he did nothing as the head coach of Arizona State, I'm willing to overlook that and think that perhaps
– can we go back to his days at Boise State?
We'll pretend,
rolling.
We'll look at the Boise State. Well, he was piggybacking off Dan Hawkins. But he – I'm going to say that he ends up taking a step –
wasn't he before Dirk, Dan Hawkins?
No, he was Hawkins' offensive coordinator.
Okay.
I'm somewhat confident. Now you're making me – it's one of those things I'm going to question myself because I thought Hawkins went to Colorado, and then Cutter became the head coach. Then he went to
Dirk Cutter was the head coach at Boise State from 98 to 2000.
And then Chris Peterson took off after him. And then, yeah, because Hawkins would have been.
Keep going. I'm going to look.
All right. Well,
Hawkins would have been.
Dirk Cutter was the head coach in 98-2000. Hawkins was from 01 to 05. And then
what?
Peterson. Yes.
All right. Well, for those fans that haven't turned off the podcast with that Dirk
it's
Cutter
history.
This has been your Mountain West Minute on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast.
On Fantasy Football Calculator, Mike Evans right now is going as the wide receiver 13. Several spots ahead of Brandon Cooks, actually, who.
Is that right?
Wide receiver 23, I think, for Cooks, if my quick counting was accurate.
Really?
Cooks is going, on Fantasy Football Calculator, he's going after Randall Cobb, Jarvis Landry, T.Y. Hilton, Martavis Bryant, and Josh Gordon.
That's interesting to me.
Wow.
That could change this offseason, but. Anyways, yeah, that was. That's a good question on Mike Evans. This backfield, though. Let's talk about this.
Well, first off, do we think Doug Martin's going to be back in Tampa next year? I do. I think he's going to stay with the Bucs.
I think he will. It would be smart for all parties, but you never know.
Right.
You never know. So, which brings us to the real question I had on here. Is Charles Sims
Not
actually.
Chuck Sims.
Chuck Sims. Sorry. You're right. Chuck Sims.
No, I mean, don't make. Let's stop trying to make him happen.
I'm not trying to make him happen. I just want to have a discussion about Chuck Sims. All right. Because he had over 1,000 scrimmage yards last year. And I believe, did he creep into the top 25 running backs? He did.
He was
RB 22. So even if Doug Martin is there, I think Chuck Sims could have value as a potential flex play in the right matchup, or especially in PPR leagues. What say you guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's some value there. I mean, he's a guy that you're probably waiting till, you know, 9th, 10th round before you take him off the board. You know, I don't know if I'd like him as a handcuff, but I think he's a guy that you plug in as a flex play when the matchup is right. Certainly, if Doug Martin, you know, gets injured, he's there, but. I mean, I think that's his ceiling right now.
Yeah, I still, God, he's kind of a big guy. It's disappointing because he's some of the, it's the bias that you carry from picking a guy up, hoping that he's going to come through for you, and then having him not do that, which kind of clouds your judgment and everything. You know, if Charles Sims ends up being the number one running back there, it's going to be his job. They draft somebody behind him. I would feel somewhat confident with it. I would be very happy to take a chance on him, but I'm just not there yet.
So, crazy Charles Sims numbers. He was second on the team in targets with 70 behind Mike Evans.
That's the one thing.
He was tied for the team lead in receiving touchdowns. He and Austin Seferian Jenkins each had 4 receiving touchdowns.
He is an excellent athlete, too. Charles Sims, which I know a lot of the measurables and metrics people on Twitter and in the community are really high on Charles Sims this year. I just think he's a name to watch, especially with what happens with Doug Martin in the coming weeks with free agency. And even if Doug Martin stays, Sims might be a name to circle as a late-round guy because we've seen Doug Martin hasn't exactly been the pinnacle of health in his career so far. He was great last year, but...
Yeah, you know what it was? Is I picked him up Falcons game. He did nothing.
And then you were burned.
You looked at it, and you're like, oh, that's a great matchup. Like, oh, you know, a lot of these variables right there, and you need somebody in a flex spot. And that didn't do much. Didn't do as much as I expected.
I know that once...
Where was the Saints?
Once Adam Rank has been burned by a player, it's hard to go back.
Fool him once. Shame on you.
Once I'm egregious,
fool him twice.
I hold that.
Not going to get fooled again.
Not going to get fooled again.
I hang on to it for a long time. I do not let it go. I will still... carry a grudge with people.
All right, real quick, and then let's get to Daps. Jameis, QB 13, is a rookie. As I mentioned, only 22 passing touchdowns. He had a few rushing scores, which helped boost his total, but he played pretty well. Is anybody buying him as maybe a low-end QB 1 if you wait on quarterbacks?
I don't know that I could make him a QB. I mean, you're talking about a QB 1. Yeah, I just don't know, because that would mean to me that more often than not, I'm putting Jameis in my starting lineup, and I don't know that I'm quite there yet with him.
That's fair.
Yeah.
There's a lot of quarterbacks out there. I don't think that anybody's going to be in a league that's large enough to warrant you playing him, unless, you know, you're in a 14-team league or something like that. A lot of the things that I like about Jameis Winston help other players. Like, I like his fearlessness. I like his ability to try to thread the needle all the time, I guess his gumption or anything like that. He's just not afraid of anything, and he makes passes that a lot of other quarterbacks would shy away from, which sometimes results in interceptions. But he does try to make plays, and I think that that's going to end up helping guys like Mike Evans down the road. Austin Seferian Jenkins is one of the stories we should be talking about because the offense could absolutely feature him too. So I think there's a lot of good stuff going on, but I don't think that Winston can be a QB1 for you this year.
Yeah. So in his last, out of his last 11 games coming off the bye, he had 18 or more fantasy points, 7 of those, and he never had fewer than 12.8, which is when he was kind of starting to put it together a little bit. Multiple touchdown passes in just 4 of those games, but he had 5 rushing touchdowns in that span, too.
I mean, I also think a lot of it really is, and we talk about game flow in the offense and all that kind of thing, and the one thing I noticed early in the year, it seemed as though they were trying to put a lot on Jameis and having him try to manage the game and throw the ball a lot, and he really struggled, especially early in the season. When they started to work the running game in more, when Doug Martin started to see more work and they were able to move the ball on the ground, I thought that's when Jameis got better. So, you know, obviously having a year of experience, maybe he can manage the offense a little bit better and he can be more of the conduit through which everything flows. But I still think, you know, they are going to need balance in order for Jameis to be a lot more successful.
See, but I don't want him to put the reins on him too much because he's kind of that – he needs to have that kind of – swagger. He needs to have the ability to go out there and make plays, you know, and sometimes he's going to throw an interception, but a lot of times he's going to end up making a huge play for you. He did it at Florida State. I think he can do it at this level. But again, because there's so much depth at the quarterback position, Matt Ryan notwithstanding, that you can go with other guys and perhaps Winston's just more of a matchup plays based player.
There you go.
All right.
It's all fair.
Yeah.
Time to dap.
Let's dap it.
Let's dap.
This is the daily. Daps and hook. Give me daps, cause I be scribbling
rap. All right, daily dap time. Adam Rank, are you ready to dap?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, go for it.
Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, big daps to Major League Baseball because spring training is starting on March 2nd.
Giddy up.
Spring training games start on March 2nd, which is amazing. Again, kicking off probably perhaps the most magical sports month of the season. Everything is going great. Love everything about spring training and everything. This is actually going to be my first time going to spring training, which is usually not.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Listen, I go to 40 Angel games a year.
Well, I know, but really I figured you had made your way down to Tempe Diablo before.
You would think.
Right?
You would think, but you would be wrong.
Oh, all right.
But I also want to give some daps to The Flash. What are the, you know, for as bad as DC movies are, and I know a lot of people aren't having high hopes for.
Okay, are you going to throw, because I'm still catching up, so are you going to drop any spoilers
no
here?
No spoilers. All right, I just think they're on a little mini hiatus right now.
Okay.
That show continues to be great. I really like that they really, like Jameis Winston, they take some chances. They're really, they're throwing haymakers. There is no slow burn on The Flash. They're really getting after it, so I appreciate that. Daps to them. Daps to Chris Law. You might know him from the Rich Eisen show. He was a coworker of ours for a long time here. He, as we're talking right now, his wife is in labor.
Hooray!
So hopefully baby Law will be here by the time that you are listening to this. Hopefully it is a short labor. I know his wife's first name. I don't know that it's out there for public consumption, so I'm not going to say it. But congratulations to them and their family. I know what it's like having a newborn, so it's going to be a lot of fun for them. Anti-daps for the new FIFA president who's saying that the World Cup in Qatar is going to stand. Like, come on. Admit your mistake, pull that one back, and just do the right thing. What? Am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
No.
They need to
You're
do
not
that.
Wrong.
Anti-daps for not having Abe Vigoda in the memoriam.
For the Oscars.
The Oscars.
Yep.
And Star Wars? I said this on Twitter. I said not having Star Wars in the best picture category is like having an NBA MVP vote without Steph Curry. It was the best movie of the year. Everybody went to see it. It's the best picture. I'm sorry. I know there was a lot of good stuff that a lot of people did, but it's a good picture. And spoiler, I know a lot of people are like, well, it's really – listen, spoiler alert. By the way, if you haven't seen episode 7, I'm going to spoil the out of it right now.
And turn off the podcast if you haven't seen it.
Turn off the podcast if you haven't seen it. But listen, somebody's like, well, it was just kind of a science fiction. I'm like, look, it's the story of a guy who's a terrible father who neglects his son, who goes on to be one of the world's – one of the galaxy's worst dictators – destroyer of planets, and so he goes to rectify this situation and gets killed for it. It's an emotional story. It's very deep, and so I think
that was very good.
It's a story about fathers and sons.
Oh. It is. It is. And the fact that it got no consideration is just – and I wouldn't be so upset if it was Mad Max was nominated.
Mad Max was
pretty fantastic.
It's a great movie, but it's like you're obviously looking at a movie and being like, a lot of people like this. Let's nominate it.
It was also a better movie, though.
Mad Max?
Yeah.
I loved Star Wars. I loved Star Wars. But
Mad Max
objectively,
movie. Yeah,
it was a better movie.
The haters. I can't deal with the haters.
What is it? It's a hating.
You're hating it. If you say, to say that it's not the best movie of the year is hating.
This Twitter generation. If you're not, if you're not for
millennials,
it,
right?
If you're not for it, you're against it.
Probably doesn't even eat cereal anymore. Cause it's too much
work. You want to follow that there, Alex? With some
I guess. I'll daily dap. I picked up recently one of my comic book runs, Sandman Overture, which is a long-awaited like prequel that Neil Gaiman wrote for his magnum opus, Sandman, one of the best comic book series ever. I haven't finished it yet, but it's been awesome just hanging out with those characters again, seeing the beautiful artwork and stuff. And then I was going to daily dap to the Oscars, for the most part being quite an enjoyable show. I thought Chris Rock did a fantastic job hosting it. I was happy to see Mad Max pull in so many awards. Happy for Leo to finally get his. Happy for Brie Larson because she was tremendous, and I was happy that Revenant didn't win Best Picture because it didn't deserve it, and I thought Spotlight was great. So there are my daps. Marcus, what do you got for us?
Did I mention I didn't watch a second of the Oscars?
Well, and you, I know you boycotted the Oscars.
Boycotted it.
Wait,
let me guess. Centuries.
Because Georgetown, Carolina?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was. I forget what game it was.
I was a youngster.
I know it was either Georgetown, Carolina or Georgetown, Villanova. I wasn't sure, but I remember you ended up having to watch the Oscars and you ended up missing a great college, a historic college basketball game because of it.
Maybe it was the Villanova. Whatever. Anyway, I missed one.
I just know Georgetown was involved. So my daily daps, one. The folks at BoingBoing.net, they found a link to an Imgur site. This is not PC. This is for the grown-ups here, but it is every Playboy centerfold ever.
What?
Yeah. So that. Just go to BoingBoing, look up Playboy centerfolds. You will find the link. Enjoy. Daps to the Muppets.
Shadowy League figures are closing in the podcast studio.
It's probably going to be just static. It's going to be like 15 seconds of static in this part of the podcast.
It's amazing to look at the grooming habits.
Indeed. Shout out to the Muppets. You know what? I haven't watched the new show at all. I hear it's supposed to be very, very good. But I see a link this morning from Rolling Stone, and the headline says, "See Jack White sing 'You Are the Sunshine of My Life' with the Muppets." That combines so many things that I enjoy. Jack White, Stevie Wonder, and the Muppets. So it's actually for the season finale of the show that airs tonight in the United States. I guess it already aired in Canada or something. I don't know. Canada's ahead of us. I don't know how, but...
How is that possible?
I don't know. But not only does he sing You Are the Sunshine of My Life with Electric Mayhem backing him up, apparently it is going to be released through Jack White's Third Man record label. Daps to Sports Illustrated. I don't know if any of you follow the SI Vault on Twitter, but they always put out some of the great historic photos from Sports Illustrated throughout the long history of the magazine. They've just revamped their vault. You can go to si.com/vault, and you can pretty much look up photos from the whole history, the whole long history of Sports Illustrated. They also link to a lot of their big-time cover stories from the past, going back decades and decades. It's always a fun follow on Twitter, and it's definitely for sports historians and just sports fans in general, a good look back. And finally, shouts out to Gerardo, who fixed my car. I had major electrical issues with my car over the weekend, all stemming from basically a bad jump of a battery. I learned more about my car's electrical system in the last 24 hours or so than I ever imagined I would. But shouts out to Gerardo, who got my car back up and running again. It was weird. I could start the car. It ran. I had zero power to the interior. So, nothing. Doors, windows, speedometer, clock, radio, nothing on the inside of the car worked. But the car ran, so I could at least drive it to the shop and have him take a look at it. And literally 2 hours later, I was back up and running, and it was all good again. But it was a frustrating afternoon. Shouts out to Gerardo for,
hey Marcus,
for helping me out.
What size rims you got on your car?
I think I have 15s.
Oh, come on.
I think I have 15s, too.
I think I've got 15.
Upgrade it once.
All right. I think that's a good way.
Yeah, well, thanks to John Moore again for coming on the podcast.
Please, daps to him, too.
Rate and comment on the podcast on iTunes and other places. That helps us know what you guys like, what you don't. If you want more rings discussions.
The hottest?
That too. Rate who's the hottest on this audio podcast.
This is hot or not? The podcast.
No, I want rankings.
Fantasy podcast Tinder. Who would you swipe right for? Who would you swipe left for?
I understand me coming in last, seeing that I don't have any hair, but it's okay. I still want to see what the people think.
There are a lot of people who like the follicle
challenge. Rate the podcast on its actual merits, on the hotness of the hosts or whatever have you. We just appreciate it, and it helps us find out what you guys like. So,
absolutely. So, I guess. That'll do it for us. James Coe, get better. For the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gellhar and the Fantasy Maverick, Adam Rank, I am Marcus Grant. We will see you.